Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes, but managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, everybody, before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, if you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports and live for the short-term gratifications of DFS, then you have to try out Weekly Fantasy Sports WFS on Owner's Box. Head on over to rotoballer.com/box and sign up today. Weekly Fantasy Sports is the best of daily and season-long. It keeps you engaged through live drafting and new multi-week games. Owner's Box will also be paying out users who bring their friends on board. Watch the real money rewards pile up through their first ever three-tiered referral system. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. But that's not it. Owner's Box will be matching your first-time deposit of up to $500 for any depositors through January 4th. Just head on over to www.rotoballer.com/box and sign up today to claim your $500 bonus and join the new wave of weekly fantasy sports. Now, to this episode of Benched with Bubba. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 356. Got a special one for us tonight. We're not going to particularly go over draft strategy or anything like that because we've done that plenty. The season is just around the corner. We're literally, by the time you're listening, it's probably a week away or less before the season begins. So I have a special guest coming on the show. He's been on the show before. I love talking to him about his metrics and other fantasy baseball-related stuff. He's the creator of Aces of Power. You can find his work at The Athletic on Twitter at RotoPope. Aaron Saceta, how we doing, man?
Bubba, great to be here. Heading into the biggest weekend of the season. So, it's great to be here. Super, super exciting. Great time.
Yep, definitely. Draft season is full steam ahead this weekend. It's go time. Hopefully not too many more injuries pop up because it's been a wild one the last few days. But the players are ready. They just don't want to. They just get us off the field. Let's go play baseball.
Yeah.
But before we get into the Aces and the Power metrics here, why don't you plug away what you got going with The Athletic? I know you just came out with your updated Aces and everything, but what else do you have going on? Because I know when you read the article, you have other things you're going to start adding to it, it sounds like. So what do you got going on?
Yeah. And I'm super slow on all that stuff. So of course it's kind of like we're up against the last hour almost, but essentially it's really that it's the Aces and the Power stuff. And that really just sets the stage for stuff to follow accordingly from those. So Aces is, the pitching side of things, looking at someone's arsenal. Power is more kind of the hitting version of that. And then usually the things that follow are late targets is kind of my focus from those. So I put out a piece, I think it came out on early this week. I think it was Monday or so, maybe it was Tuesday, around my favorite targets by Aces going after pick 200. And that's been a pretty fun exercise to run in the past. I know that's kind of turned me to like someone like Zach Eflin a couple of years ago. So it hasn't always worked great, but yeah, that's a fun one to do. And I'm working on a Power one right now. And last year, that it actually worked pretty well. So working on that right now, but it's mostly those two and the late targets based on those.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Cause your metric, I had you on when we talked about Aces, like it goes last year, maybe even the year before.
This is number three for me.
Yeah. It's number three and it's a lot of fun, but I might have to start having you a little mid-season because you're doing so much with these. It used to be like you just kind of updated them a little bit here and there. It was more of a off-season for the next season thing. But
yeah,
with the development you're continuing to do with this, it's like we're going to start sniffing things out. And I'm going to ask some of those questions when we get into it. But let's jump into it. Aces, I believe this is year Is this year three or year four of Aces?
This is year three. It initially came out in 2019. That's right. But I do have it a little bit historical going back to 2017. So you can look at, well, actually, I'm sorry. I guess this is year number. Yeah, this is year number three, but 2018 was the first year that we had data for. So that, you know, obviously that came out 2019, looking back at the 2018 season.
Yeah, where we've come, because I remember when you first were on, you're like sending me the sheet that, okay, don't share this because this is kind of a secret little deal. But now I subscribe to The Athletic, and the cool thing is I read your article and click on a button, it's in my sheets folders now.
Yeah.
And it's so cool. So that's awesome to have. And you have so many sortable tabs on there. Like for you, where it started to where it is now, like what steps have you been taking? And then like where has it gone now that you maybe didn't think it was going before, type thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was definitely a big one. I think one thing I really liked writing for Chris and at CBS, great group over there. But yeah, I think that was one thing where maybe there wasn't as much visibility on all of the metrics because it was behind the Sportsline paywall. And maybe there was, it wasn't as clear to me. So I think that is pretty cool where, you know, maybe it's a little bit more more accessible to all of the Athletic subscribers and everything like that. So I think that's pretty cool. And then I think the main place that this has gone from where it started two or three years ago is it was very, very simple, which maybe that was better actually when it first came out. It was really just looking at three things. It was velo, movement, and command. And which was essentially just a continuation of, you know, Saris's Arsenal scores. That's pretty much where, I mean, this idea directly came from that. It pretty much just took it. And then I think the big addition was that command plus that he had sort of shown to everyone via stats. And so that's where it was. But then you had all these other things out there with StatCast that we knew were important, but it was just to what degree. And I think that first offseason didn't really have a time to dig too deep into those, but that's things like spin rate was definitely a big one I wanted to look at. I wasn't super comfortable with the weightings on how the various movement was, which in the first iteration just basically weighted those things exactly the same across all the pitches. So I think that's where it's really come since then, is diving a lot deeper into each individual pitch and having those weightings, you know, things like velocity, spin rate, movement, command being a little bit different by pitch based on, you know, the testing that I've been doing. And then also just adding things that I've tested, you know, somewhat surprisingly in a lot of cases have tested really well. So things like release extension, I wasn't expecting to include in Aces, but it was hard to keep it out based on how the testing was looking. I know that one was a bit of a surprise to me. And so I think those have been the big changes, and that's been going for the last couple of years now. And, you know, the 2020 season being weird as it was without the full sample didn't really give me the chance to do a full test this offseason as I would have liked. So kind of just ran it back with similar, if not the same, weightings from the previous season. So I think these next two off seasons will be interesting to really see how we want to evolve it from here. But yeah, those are the main ones, is really just getting deeper into each pitch and adding more of these other elements. So it's definitely gotten more complex. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, but yeah, it was hard to keep some of these things out that looked important based on the testing.
Yeah, the complexity is a thing that's not for me, but that's why I like just reading the Aces numbers and going that direction. I'll let you do the hard work. And I'll read the metrics.
So that's my favorite part too. Once the work is all done, I get to look at their actual rankings. I'm like, finally, that's what I'm doing all this for, is I want to see that.
Yeah, that's so much easier. But like you mentioned, like seam shifted wake. That's a new one that you're thinking about looking into.
I haven't even looked at that. Yeah. I mean, that's something that Eno kind of wrote up, and I haven't looked at that at all. So that's definitely something to look at in the future. So there's just these other things to look at. And I know Driveline had put together their own stuff score, and I think they had looked also at things like spin direction, but more so relative to the fastball also. Okay. And then that just like spin sense. Efficiency. And so there's just all these other things that I'd like to look at, get my hands on that I haven't had the chance to yet. So this will have to suffice for now, but definitely in the future looking to just start testing more of those other pieces as well.
Well, it definitely will suffice because it's awesome stuff, but I am curious to see where that continues to go, because like the driveline spin stuff, we've heard pitchers talk about it, that they, like Josh Lindblom's one guy that says, I know my, or even Chris Paddock said, I know my spin's bad on my fastball, I'm working on doing it. And they've seen in the limited StatCast we have in spring, we've seen adjustments for those things and it's working. So I wonder, like a full season of it and the comparisons, that'd be fun to see for sure. You have Aces and you have Aces Plus. Yeah. Can you let the listeners know real quickly the difference between the two?
I think the easiest way to think about it is aces is just going to be the raw stuff. Essentially, you could call it raw stuff and command, but it's just the raw stuff in command. It's basically the things that are very innate to a pitcher. It's how fast they throw a pitch, how much spin they have on a fastball, how much movement they get, et cetera. So it's those kinds of things, and command. And then Ace Plus takes those same things, but it also adds in select outcomes. And I think that was one of my favorite early, I think that might've been one of the first things I had seen with Arsenal scores that I thought was really interesting back, like, man, this is probably 6-7 years ago or so, but it had various outcomes like ground balls or swinging strikes that Eno and I think others that followed him used to develop their Arsenal score at the time. So that was actually a huge addition that I didn't mention when you mentioned how this has evolved. But when we first looked at this, it was just looking at those raw components, just the stuff and the command. And I thought it'd be great to see how important some of these outcomes are. So like we've got like strikeout rate, which actually tested as more predictive than swinging strike, even at the per pitch level. So we've got that. We've got some swinging strike elements in there. We've got some ability to minimize damaging contact as well. So we've got some of those pieces in there in Aces Plus. So you've got, I think it actually came out to on average, it's a little bit more, Aces Plus is more outcome driven, like those kinds of things. So I think it's like about 62% outcomes, and then the other 38% is a mix of stuff and command. So you can almost think of Aces Plus as 38% aces, and then the rest is some of like these old, you know, almost like a refresh version of those original Arsenal scores that we used to talk about. So I think I like having both. I think naturally with something like Aces Plus, because you do have outcomes, it is going to be more predictive of future performance, but it also, it's just a little bit less sticky year to year, just because we're looking at things that are, you know, happening with small balls on a baseball field. And whereas just looking at stuff and command and aces, I thought was pretty cool that it was more predictive than ERA. We're not looking at anything that is actually happening other than just how fast these guys are throwing, how much movement they're getting, how much spin they're getting. So I think that's pretty cool. And because we are looking at those things, it's quite sticky year to year. Like you don't often see, I mean, sometimes you do, but you don't often see someone being really good by aces 1 year and then just complete crap the next year, unless something was wrong with them. Like maybe they got hurt. So I think that's pretty cool. And Paddock might actually be an interesting example. I'm actually going to pull him up here, because if he lost some spin, in theory, his aces would go down a little bit. If he truly did lose a little bit of spin, which I don't think is very typical. I don't think you typically lose a lot of spin year to year. And so I'm looking at his aces now, and yeah, it remained relatively constant. He was 85th percentile in 2019, and he was 82nd percentile last year. So that might have something to do with his losing a little bit of spin on that four seam. And so, yeah, but long-winded way of saying aces is just the raw stuff and command, and then aces plus adds an element of outcomes into that as well.
I will have to say one of the coolest additions, and I'll go back to the Aces Plus, but what you just did there is I want to let people know, if you have this sheet, you have the leaderboards and all this different stuff from year to year and over the couple of years combined, but the first page is what he just did. You can go pitcher by pitcher, and it gives you all the years. It gives you all the different scores, all the different weights of stuff. It's pretty awesome. I'm just going to say, like looking at all the different things here, and you color code it so dummies like me can figure it out, and it's this is some pretty cool stuff, because basically it's kind of what you're saying. You know, you want to see, did it change from year to year? Well, now if we have a guy that's got 4 years of samples, obviously Paddock doesn't have 4 years.
Yeah,
we can see how they've either improved or decreased and why, maybe, and stuff like that, which is really darn cool to look at. So
yeah,
I think that's when we get to a little farther down the discussion here, a great way to look for, you know, your post 200 guys and stuff like that in different ways. So I think that's really awesome. Dumb question, and you can tell me if it's just the way it worked out. Just say it's like sometimes you don't want to know how the sausage is made, so I get it. But you have the different weights in your article. How did you decide what to do? Because you've said it in the article, and you said it a little bit there. Like when you're looking at, just say, aces in general, well, you have effective velo is 20%, but you still have velo at 3%. So they're kind of similar, but kind of not. And that happens. It happens in a lot of your metrics, and it makes sense when you break it down. But how do you decide where to give the weights, or is it just kind of that's how it worked?
It's mostly science, but there's definitely art to it as well, where ultimately I'm making the final decisions. I think I saw Ethan Moore kind of did this a little bit in his quality of stuff metric that he sort of like sent to Eno as part of that field Eno's rankings. And like sometimes you look at the testing on a per pitch basis, and it'll give you a general sense on like how you should weight things. But ultimately, you have to make the decision to how much you want to weight something. And so I know, like for me, when I was going through some of these things, something like extension was testing as like one of the most important things in all of these pitches. And so it's like, man, I'm guessing that's right, but I don't feel comfortable weighting it as much as it's suggesting that I should weight this. And so I think you kind of have to make those final decisions and come to the right things. I think the reason you see weird things like effective velo and velo in there, it's because of that damn splitter. Like I need to revisit how I'm looking at the splitter. I think part of it's just you look at tiny, tiny samples with a splitter. And so it's hard to figure out what the right weightings are. It's like, I think the better splitters have tested as like, basically I think splitters have tested as saying less spin is better. And like less velo is better. It's just an odd pitch. I don't really understand the splitter, but that's more or less what it is looking at that per pitch level. Looking at performance in one season against performance in the next, kind of at like the sort of like an entire pitch level, if you will, for all pitchers that have pitched a certain amount of pitches for that pitch. And then what elements of what we're talking about here were most predictive of that next season performance. And so I've been looking at things like what was most predictive of next season's expected WOBA, what was most predictive of next season's strikeout rate at that pitch level. So that's how I've been doing it. I'd like to also like kind of rethink a little bit every offseason if that's the best way to do it. But to date, that's been the way I've been looking at it.
Yeah, I could see, like, you know, you guys sit back and look, because each season you see different pitch types developed. You see different velocity changes, kind of a league-wide thing, not just a general thing. So maybe that will affect, like you're saying, we're okay, let's take a step back and say 2021, we got to kind of do this weighting compared to what took place here. So that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned different pitch types, and obviously that's kind of broken down more in Aces Plus, I believe, than in Aces. But have you found certain pitchers that excel in certain pitch types are better in Aces than in others?
You know, I haven't. I know I've heard from other kind of like stuff metrics, like guys that throw a sinker are going to rate maybe a little bit higher by stuff metrics than others, just because it's like a pitch that typically has good velo and movement, but maybe doesn't quite drive sort of like the crazy strikeouts that help in fantasy as much. So I think those are the kinds of pitchers to watch out for. I mentioned the splitter earlier. Like if someone relies on the splitter quite a bit, I just trust their Aces metric a little bit less, just because that's such an odd pitch. So those are the main ones that come to mind. But otherwise, no, I don't think so. Nothing particularly striking me as one pitch type to pay attention to over another.
No, I was kind of curious about that. Now you just mentioned the splitter thing, so I have to pull up Kevin Gausman, because I've been anti-Gausman this year. But his Aces last year, 80 Aces plus 81, but previous to that was a little shaky. So yeah, the fastball velo helped out a ton there, I think. But he throws a ton of splitters.
Yeah, he does. You're right, 42% last year. So he's got a 55th percentile Aces, 100th percentile Aces plus. So that would suggest they had really good results on the pitch. And then you look at other things like, it looks like he had like the best expected WOBA among all splitters essentially last year. He's got, you know, almost top 10% in whiff rate, top 25% in ground ball plus pop up. So it looks like a good pitch, and I'm sure it is. It's just, yeah. But his Aces for the splitter is 55th percentile. So I don't know. That's, I'm kind of with you. I haven't really been super on Gausman, just maybe because I've been burned in the past a little bit. And I'm just not totally buying in, but, based on Aces and Aces plus, he looks pretty interesting.
Let's see where it's fun, because he kind of broke out last year, so that's why everyone's on him. But then I'm on that page I talked about, the Gausman page. So I clicked to 2019, and that splitter was used 41% of the time, but those numbers are not the same as they were in 2020. So there's where my hesitation and trepidation comes in, because like you said, burned before. Let's wait and see for me. But came to mind when you mentioned that.
I mean, ultimately, he's just like that two-pitch kind of guy. I mean, I guess I'm looking right here. He threw the slider 7% of the time, but it's just – He's up there with you in the Bay Area and stuff, but and he's got that park behind him, so that's always going to be a nice landing spot for a pitcher. But yeah, the two pitch guys, it's just not my favorite kind of guy to go after, but it can work.
Yeah, two pitch guys terrify me. And then if people just look at the sheet here for 2020, if the splitter turns back to 2019, there's not much else there that's going to support him in a good way. So that's where it it just brings my conversation to it. But hey, this is a good way to do some research.
Yeah.
When you're looking at ACES and ACES Plus, you mentioned predictive of ERA. There's other metrics, Sierra, PERA. There's all kinds of them out there. With ACES and ACES Plus, and you can separate them if you want, what's your goal and which one's stickier for what you're trying to accomplish?
So my goal is to predict future ERA, because that's sort of, I think, one of the easier benchmarks to think through. And it's one of the hardest things to predict across all of fantasy, is future ERA. So I think that's sort of the goal of something like ACES and ACES Plus. And I think the trade-off between the two is, if you really just want to find what is most predictive future ERA, you're probably going to want to look at ACES Plus among the two. But I think the trade-off there is that ACES Plus will just fluctuate a little bit more year to year. So if you have someone that's good by ACES and ACES Plus 1 year, it's more likely that they're going to have a similar ACES metric the next year than ACES Plus. So that's why I kind of like looking at both. And when I wrote up that sleepers piece, I the criteria for that, for the guys that I wanted to consider, were ideally you were just above average in both. So I looked at that, but then I did also look at, okay, who was really good, who was top 25% by ACES, regardless of what their ACES Plus was, and who was top 25% by ACES Plus, regardless of what their ACES was. So those are just different ways I like to look at it. Ultimately, both, you know, being good is best, but I'll look at all variations just to see if I can kind of mind interesting players out there that are showing interesting skills that I wouldn't have thought about much otherwise.
Okay, perfect. Because yeah, some of the guys we're going to talk about later that I put on the sheet, it's kind of where guys that stood out with either good ACES and bad ACES Plus or vice versa. So we kind of have a conversation of maybe why or something, yeah, and kind of where that goes. And they're also kind of players that are of interest for people in fantasy coming in this year. So you're trying to predict ERA, which you said is extremely difficult, as we know. And it's like, you know, trying to pick wins or whatever. Like, pitching is just a tough thing. Like, when we talk about power, hitting's a little more easy.
Yeah.
It's never perfect. Nothing's ever perfect, but it's easier than pitching.
That's feel better sure. about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because pitchers get hurt all the time. Like, there's so many different things that take place. And they're always tinkering with stuff. So, like, mm-hmm. you go and figure something out, and now they have a new pitch, or they're doing this, and it changes everything. So that makes things very, very interesting. If someone were to get the Athletic and get your ACES sheet and everything, go through it, how would you recommend going about it in drafts to look for players maybe they like, or for justification on, you know, the player A versus player B or something along those lines? How would they use your ACES metric?
Yeah. Well, I think the way that I went about looking for those kind of late targets, like, that's one way that I like to use it right away, is who are the guys going after whatever pick you're looking for. I chose pick 200. In the past, I looked at past 300, whatever kind of fits the league type that you're looking for or whatever depth you're looking for. I'll go look at guys going after that point. And then ideally I'm looking for a few different things. And I think you can go look at this. You can look at a lot of this in the leaderboards on the Athletic. I think you'll have to pull in ADP data to look at it. But I'll want to, and you might need to pull in some projections as well if you want to do it this way. But essentially how I went about building that 200 plus targets was, I looked at, I would say, three things. I looked at, were you above average by both ACES and ACES Plus, or are you top 25% in either of them? Are you going after pick 200? Are you projected for an ERA less than 4.75? Just because I kind of want to use that as a bit of a benchmark to say, I'm not really going to look at you if you're projected worse than that. I think that was basically a hat tip to Jeff Zimmerman and Tanner Bell, some of their research in the process. And then the last thing, we kind of touched on this a little bit with Gaussman, and it's, do they also throw three pitches 10% more, or 10% of the time or more? And that's just a bit of my bias. I like to look at that. I think that was from some of the research that Mitchell Lichtman did on his blog about reducing times through the order penalty. The more pitches you have that you throw, call it 8, 10% of the time, the more you're going to reduce that penalty. And so I like looking at that, and that's my go-to. And so that'll fuel the guys that I like to look at late. And ideally, they've also shown some other semblance of skills, like some other semblance of performance, call it, with something like a decent K minus walk rate. I think that's the other thing. If I see that, then I'm like, okay, I'm liking this guy. And so that's how I go about building those late targets. Earlier on, I think I'll use it maybe, I might use it a little bit to fade certain guys if I'm not already super comfortable with them and they also don't show well by ACES, but I'm not going to do that all the time. Like, Clayton Kershaw looks like crap by aces, and it's almost like a borderline indictment on the enterprise of this metric itself with something like that. But that those are the times where I'm just like Clayton Kershaw's like, you know, he's proven this over and over and over again. He's a future Hall of Famer. I don't think we need a metric to tell us he's good or bad at this point.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's one of those where it's like, okay, well, some metrics just aren't meant for certain people. We're just gonna move on. But it's like you say in your product, the metrics obviously work when you know it's like Bauer, Cole, DeGrom, Wheeler, Bueller, Woodruff. Yeah, those are the guys that should be near the top. Yes.
Like, yeah, I always feel good when I see that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of guys standing up and be like, no, you know, Tommy Malone should not be on this. Like that kind of stuff. So that makes sense. And I could see it with Kershaw. He's not overpowering. He throws a lot of curveballs. It's like for what you're measuring, it doesn't like jump off the page. But you know, but he does get a lot of strikeouts. So yeah, it's a tough one. That's a really tricky one.
Exactly.
It's just the weights basically just don't favor his type of pitch mix.
It's the weights and the methodology looks at all these guys relative to their peers. And so lefties just in general get penalized a little bit. So that's why actually when I see a lefty that rates relatively well, I kind of just mentally almost boost them up a little bit. I'm just like, oh wow, like you're a lefty and you're showing well amongst all of the righties. You know,
dumb question. Why would lefties rank worse or rate out worse?
Only because the way the methodology works is it's looking at how strong it's mainly. And when I say that, it's mainly about velocity. And
okay, gotcha. Most of the lefties don't throw hard.
Exactly. Gotcha. So this is essentially grading how all of your stats or skills rate among your peers across all of these things like spin rate, velocity, etc. And spin rate would actually probably be another one of those because it's correlated so strongly with velocity. So because you're just going to rank a little bit lower on velocity and spin rate than righties. And so your aces and aces plus will just be perhaps a tad bit lower on average for the average lefty.
No, I love that. That's really interesting. And everyone would have thought about that. So another thing to think about when looking at the metrics, but I love these. It's great to look at. I know I talk to Eno and I hear him talk about, you know, aces and command plus and all these different things that he uses. And he's one of the sharper minds when it comes to this stuff. So I like when you're working with him because you're definitely a very sharp mind when it comes to this. It's pretty good stuff. Let's talk about some pitchers now. And this is fun. Like I said, there's certain ones I'm just not going to bring up because it's pretty obvious. Or there's like Garrett Richards, great in aces, not so much in aces plus. I'm guessing results aren't the best for Garrett Richards.
Yes.
Just my thing. So like Tyler, I don't need to all those type deals. Tyler Chatwood ranks out very well, which is interesting. That's one that kind of stands like, but one of the ones I want to ask you about here, and it's a popular name because he's a young pitcher. He's shown signs of life, but for me, he walks too many guys. And this could be the reason why maybe he's not, but you have Dylan Cease who has an aces rating of 94 or of 94%. He has an aces plus rating of 29%. So a massive drop off, like big difference here. What is it with Dylan Cease? And does this make you like, go, no, I don't want to trust him this year?
I think I look at probably two or three things that I don't like. It's one of them is the aces plus, but then you dig a tad bit deeper and this is kind of embedded in aces and aces plus, but perhaps not enough, but he's got an 83 command plus. So he's got bottom, you know, minus command for a starter. And then the other thing that I just want to get a quick sense on is, you know, just what your K minus walk rate looks like. And it was 4% last year. And so you're just not going to find me betting on guys like this unless they're just like, I don't think there's ever a time. I almost always find someone I like more, but it would have to be very late. I'm looking at his latest ADP on NFBC and it's still like inside the top 300. It's not super pricey, but yeah, I'm not particularly interested. I'm okay losing on a bet like this if someone else wants to take it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are on him. I'm not one of them. I'm like you because I just see so many walks in him. Yeah. It just like if you start doing that, you're not throwing innings. You're risking an ERA. Like, there's so many things that go wrong. That the stuff like when he's on, he's outstanding. But just when's he on? That's the question. So the next guy I want to ask you about he's another late round type guy. He's another kind of popular name depending on where you're looking. But Spencer Turnbull. He's a guy for the Detroit Tigers we've seen show signs of life at times last year, and then other times not so much. And it's fun when you look at his page, 2018, awesome aces and aces plus. 2019, they both dropped tremendously. 2020, aces is back up to a decent number. Aces plus is still down. What are you seeing if you like look at Spencer Turnbull?
You know, I actually like Turnbull. So when I mentioned that piece of a player's going after pick 200, He actually showed up on my list of names to consider. I think like based once I entered all those criteria, I think I had like 22 names. He was one of them. And I was definitely considering writing him up. I think some of the things that I like about him are, you know, he's got relatively good stuff. He's got a pretty wide arsenal too. He throws four pitches roughly 10% of the time or more. Granted, two of those are fastballs between the four seam and the sinker, but still he's got a little bit of a wide arsenal. I think that's a decent park for pitchers. I think the reason I probably didn't ultimately write him up was, we play fantasy, so I just didn't really care too much to have a Detroit pitcher as much. But I think he's interesting. I know Eno likes him quite a bit. I'm not ending up with a ton of him, but I think also wasn't there like some injury concerns as well with him? I thought that was part of it as well. But I think
he's been up and down,
he's not one of my top targets late, but I like him.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, it depends on how my draft's going. I know in best balls I have a lot of him just because I'll take the chances when he does throw good outings. But throughout the season, there's going to be some ups and downs. But it's just another example of how the metric fluctuates with him. And it kind of, if you look back on his production, it makes sense. But I do like how he does have a very nice arsenal. If we want to talk nice arsenal, Jose Berríos, he's a four-pitch pitcher, which we love. He's rated out pretty well in the top 20 percentile in aces every year since 2017, but his aces plus dropped off tremendously in 2020. Again, small sample, so do with that what you wish. But he's a guy that, you know, the K to walk is what it is. Not a massive strikeout guy, but tons of innings. So what's your thoughts on him this year?
You know, I like Berríos. I'm not crazy about the price, so I don't really end up with him a ton. But I think he's okay. And I know, you know, he had pedigree coming up. He's got, you know, definitely plenty of things working in his favor. But I think what you're probably buying is, you know, a high threes pitcher, good win potential. So I think this is one of those probably relatively solid picks, but it just not necessarily what I'm looking for. So I'm not ending up with him a ton. I'm not necessarily crazy about him at his price, but I think, you know, he's okay. I'm not gonna criticize anyone too much for taking him and kind of dreaming that maybe, you know, I can buy floor here, but there's potentially another level.
I could see that. Now let's shift gears just a slight bit here. Julio Urias, very popular prospect. Innings is always a concern with the Dodgers. Pitched great in the postseason. Last 2 years, top 20 percentile in aces. Last year, aces plus was great. This year, 50%. So he took a massive drop off here. Pitch mix wise, that's a little concerning too for a guy like yourself. I prefer at least three pitches as well, so I'm with you there. When you're looking at his metrics here, what scares you the most? Are you going to kind of let it go because we've seen him be awesome? Or are you just like, no, this is not going to work for me?
Well, I think one thing that I mentioned in that late targets piece is that, you know, Dodgers pitchers, granted, they've had a lot of talented guys, but like it's just typically a situation that you do want a piece of. I think they've outperformed their FIP by like 40 points in the last 3 years. By far the best mark in the league. They've had, call it maybe the best ERA in the league, third most wins. So it's one of those very, you know, very fantasy friendly situations. So I don't think you can ever fade any situation like that. I think one thing that does give me a little bit of pause is just seeing pretty mediocre K minus walk rate last year of about 12%. And I think some of those innings were coming as relievers. So I think that definitely gives me some pause. But his 2019 was a little bit better. So I think, you know, I like Urias. I know Eno's definitely quite in on him. He's just one of those guys, again, where I think at the price, I'm not necessarily loading up. It's a situation that you want a piece of, but maybe if that's really what you're targeting, maybe you go after someone a little bit less expensive, kind of at that fifth Dodgers pitcher range, kind of like in that May Gonsolin price territory.
You mentioned a good point there that he's out of the bullpen a lot last year, and that could have something to do with the pitch mix change. Because if you go to his 2019 pitch mix, there's more slider and curves involved, where obviously if you're coming out of the pen late in the game, I'm just going to throw it past you. That's all I'm trying to do. And that obviously could make a big difference in a lot of the metrics you're looking at there.
Yeah,
so good point on that. That could definitely justify some things. Truly take the other side of things. And this is fun because Michael Pineda is one of those guys where you know he gets blown up from time to time, but he still somehow he eats up innings and he kind of lulls you in once in a while throughout a season, like should I stream him type stuff. You look at aces, 2019, 9%, 2020, 5%, aces plus 40%, but 61% last year. Cato walks good. He throws three pitches. What is it that makes his Aces Plus so much better than his Aces?
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, I know. This is crazy. Yeah. Michael Pinata as Paul Spohr, like to always call him, which I thought was great. Yeah. I mean, he was one of those great K minus walk guys. Almost seemed like he was coming to the zone too much because he'd have good strikeout rate. He would almost walk no one. You know, I think homers have been his big issue. And then at this point, you're dealing with a lot of the injury issues. So, yeah, I think he's not particularly expensive. So I'm looking at ADP right now going inside the top 220, but he's not, I don't like him enough to take him there with the level of injury risk that you know you're getting. And I don't think he's proven the level of performance that warrants kind of needing to perhaps bank on him. So I think just those two alone, like I think according to Jeff Zimmerman and Eno's ranking or injury percentiles that they were putting together, like he's like in the top 5% of most likely to get injured again. So I just don't think that, you know, with all of those factors, he's someone that I'm going to be targeting.
Yeah, that's why I love looking at this metric, because Pineda's a guy that he interests me because we know what he can do. But yes, home runs are a bugaboo, injuries are a bugaboo. But you look at this metric, and it's like a big red flag. Like, whoa! What's the deal here? This is a really strange one to look at. So it kind of can make you get off a guy or whatnot. But the last one I have for you here, and this is one that's been a very popular name this preseason. I know some people that are all in on Zach Plesac, other ones not so much. His price has gone down over the last month or so. Still, I think it's around 70, 75, give or take, but it was way up there at one point in time. His Aces, 14 and 11%. Aces plus 23, 63% this last time because the command was much better. He was much, much better this last time around. But still, Aces, not a big fan of Zach Plesac. So what do you have on this guy? Because, yeah, if you look at his pitch mix, my goodness, it's very entertaining.
Yeah. Isn't that just super Cleveland though, is to have a guy without, you know, like the big stuff, but still churning out, you know, quality innings. I feel like I'm like super negative on these guys, but Plesac's definitely not really someone I'm going to end up with much. I feel like his price has gone down. I could have sworn he was in the 50s for a while. And now I'm looking at the latest ADP this last weekend. Yeah. He's like in 85 range. I'm still not necessarily super interested at that price. To your point, doesn't really have big stuff. You know, he's got okay stuff based on on Ethan Moore's metric, but I think he's got about league average command, and it just feels like a situation where you're paying for a really big year. I mean, he did have that great came on his walk rate last year, so I can see it. I can see where people are coming from on this one, but not at these prices. And actually, one last thing on Cleveland pitchers, though, they are a lot like Dodger pitchers in the last 3 years. You know, it's definitely been a great situation to be a part of. You know, I don't know how much of that is driven by just having a great set of pitchers. Like, you know, when you have Corey Kluber, Carlos Carrasco, Mike Clevenger, Shane Bieber taking the mound, your collective stats are probably going to look pretty damn good. But also, how much is it about Cleveland being able to just bring out the best in guys as well? So I can understand why people are targeting the situation. But for me, I'm not particularly interested in Plesac. I think this is kind of maybe where I use Aces a little bit and Aces Plus. If you don't really strike, if you don't pop as super strong, especially by Aces Plus, where you know you are factoring in some of those key results, then and you know you're kind of at this more premium pick and you don't have the track record to back it up, I think that's where I pump the brakes a bit.
Okay, while you were talking, I was scrolling a little more, and we don't have to go super deep on this one because I didn't put it on the outline, but you mentioned that they're at the end of Plesac. When the Aces Plus is a certain level, the Aces isn't, it makes you kind of think about things. Kenta Maeda had a monster season last year. There's no hiding that. And we've known the talents there, but Dodgers they dodger him. And it was frustrating. He goes to Minnesota, pitches however much he wants. It was great. Aces Plus year after year, you know, 30th percentile, 25th, 25th. He was 90% last year. Like, he was great. Aces has never been a big fan of Kenta Maeda.
Yeah.
We know he's a great command pitcher. Is that why Aces Plus likes him so much more than Aces?
I think it's part of that. Yeah. I don't think he's not a big plus velo guy.
That's true.
And so I think that's a big piece of it. But I think when I do, so like I mentioned Plesac, for example. So we're looking at Maeda. Maeda has had better Aces Plus scores throughout the last four seasons than Plesac had last year. So I think when you see that continued performance and the more plus command that he at least showed, at least per command plus in 2019, I think that can kind of give you the better sense that this is more bettable. And I mentioned K-minus walk rate a couple of times, but that's something I like to look at. And if he, I mean, he's been doing it year after year. Yes. So something else is in there that's not being fully captured. And I kind of touched on this a little bit in the limitations of things like aces in the piece. Like, you know, there could be elements of deception, sequencing, tunneling. That's just hard to capture. And so if, you know, those sorts of things are sort of embedded in performance metrics like K-minus walk rate. If he's got that going well, then there's something else going that aces isn't capturing. So I'm willing to just trust the combination there of like aces plus and K-minus walk rate, for example.
Okay, before we move on to Pala, with this aces metric, and it's been a lot more like year after year, like I said earlier, it's been developing and it's been not just like a preseason type thing. How do you plan on utilizing this in season this year? Or is it really we're just going to kind of see how the stats look and we're going to reassess it in the fall?
Yeah, you know, 2 years ago, I did do an early season refresh, call it like a month or so into the season. We'll see what happens this year. I'm not sure if we'll necessarily be able to do that. That's a bit of a TBD. But I think one thing that I have liked to look at is one final piece of methodology here on how aces and aces plus are developed is ultimately the numbers that you see as percentiles. Those are based on the pitch mix weights of the pitcher from the previous season. So one thing that I do like to look at is how are pitchers' pitch mixes changing early in the season? Are they favoring a pitch that performed better by aces and aces plus in past seasons and maybe de-emphasizing pitches that didn't perform as well? And that becomes interesting pretty quickly. So I think that's kind of how we use things like this early in the season, is just to see what's changing and then do we think that's a good change, and then kind of make, you know, quick action or quick decisions based on that.
I like that. That's like one of the big questions I get a lot from listeners of the show. And I have questions for all the time with any metric or anything we're doing, like with all the StatCast stuff we have now and everything, is how many innings do we have to see? How many pitches do we need to see before we say, okay, this is an actual change we should be doing something with. Yeah. So like, there's really, like there is an answer, but there's not an answer. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like how do you go about that? Like not, this doesn't have to do with your aces or metric or anything, but when you're evaluating, do you wait till, you know, May or June, or is there like four starts? How do you look at it?
Yeah. Well, pitchers can be a little bit different. I think there's a couple of things that, you can see as, pretty meaningful right away. Like velocity probably, I mean, maybe even as quick as one start, but, you know, two or three starts, certainly seeing how velocity has changed year over year, guys that are down are definitely concerning. Guys that are up, you know, could be in for improved performance that season. And I think also the pitch mix changes as well. Maybe I'd give that a couple more starts, you know, maybe a few starts to see if that's, you know, something that looks like it might stick. But I think you can be pretty quick on those things for starting pitchers. Hitters are a little bit different, but it's kind of the same set of stats. Like it's looking at things like strikeouts, walks. Those are going to be kind of the, when you look at more of the stats basis and less of like things like velo, it's going to come down to things like strikeouts and walks, probably at the, I think for hitters, it's like 60 PAs or so for strikeouts. Yeah. So still relatively early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hitters, we can move on. Pitchers, it's so tricky. So tricky. Yeah. Cause wasn't it just a bad start? Like there's so many weird things with pitchers to pull the trigger, they say, on. But we'll move on for this. I love talking about this metric because, A, you keep developing the new stuff, and, B, it just – even though we've talked about it before, it feels like I learned so much more new stuff because it's just things jump out at you like that, that make it quite interesting, especially now you can compare them and that the sheet and everything. It's
a lot of cool things there. The historical stuff,
A lot of cool stuff you can compare year to year. I mean, I love it. So people, go check that out. Let's move to the hitters. Let's give them their time. And the metric is POWA, P-O-W-A. And I love it because the name's pretty cool and it makes tons of sense when we get into why. And B, I can never get enough hitting metrics because there's so many cool ones. Like ex-WOBA is what this was about, kind of like part of it. We'll talk about that. Or WOBA it actually is. Ex-WOBA is one we use all the time. Ex-WOBACON is one we use all the time.
Yeah.
There's so many of these metrics now. And this is the first time you've been on that POWA is a discussion topic now. So why don't you let everybody know what POWA is first before we go any deeper?
Well, dude, it's kind of exactly what you're talking about there, where like it was almost born out of frustration on my end, where it's like you hear all of these different metrics being talked about. And I think it was just me kind of being like really slow to the party. I was like, dude, I don't like, are these good ones that people are talking about? Or it's like, and I do this all the time too, where it's like you look at a player and you look at what he's doing well to help support your argument. Or if you're trying to kind of denigrate a player, you look at what he's not doing well. Mm-hmm. But it's like, are those things really important or not? And so that's kind of what I set out to do with POWA. It kind of is my you know, ACES response to hitters is looking at what are the best metrics for hitters. And especially now that we've had StatCast data since 2015 or so, what are the best metrics for hitters? And then by how much as well? So like, those are really just the two basic questions that I was trying to answer. And that's how Powell came to be, is I kind of went through the same process as ACES. Like, as we sort of talked about, hitters are a little bit simpler in that, you know, I'm not looking at this stuff at like a per pitch level or anything like for ACES. It's just sort of looking at the overall for hitters. Ended up testing 80 plus metrics that you can find on StatCast, and ultimately sort of landed on these. I think it's 9 or so that tested the best in terms of predictiveness of that future ex-WOBA. Future WOBA. These were the 9 that I ended up landing on there, and ended up just going about weighting them in a very similar way that we talked about with ACES. It's doing sort of that testing on what combination of these tested as most predictive of future WOBA. And there's a small element of art in there, but for the most part, yeah, it's kind of just driven by what various weightings were most predictive of future performance.
And you mentioned it. It's because there's so many metrics out there, and a lot of them are good, but there's so many of them, it gets tricky. And you combine like barrels in here. You got, you know, fly ball, line drive, exit velocity, all these things we like to use, but we use them like a max exit velocity. We use them all kind of separately,
different ways.
You brought them all together. So
that was the goal.
I'm loving this. When I started really digging into it a couple days ago, I've read the article before, but to actually kind of dig in to get questions for you, I was like, okay, this is really cool. When you're looking at this, and since you said StatCast has been going for 5 years now, your historical data goes all the way back to 2015 for players. So that's really cool as well. When you came upon this, how are you utilizing this to evaluate players? Similar, I guess, we talked about how you do it with ACES. With PAWA, is it strictly like, you know what, this is taking over for ex-WOBA? I guess what I'm trying to ask you is, you mentioned the stickiness and how it can compare to ex-WOBA, basically. How does this compare to like predictive stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the goal with something like this, was to take all of the best pieces of data that we have and just structure and weight it in a way that is as predictive as possible. And so, yeah, it did end up testing better than ex-WOBA, better than expected slugging, and better than WOBA itself, OPS, all of those. So it ended up testing as more predictive of all of those. And, you know, I mentioned some limitations in the piece as well of it, but I think, you know, right away that gave me some, you know, encouragement that, like, yeah, I think for me, at least, this is sort of what I would use to evaluate how someone performed the previous season. If I just wanted to look at one thing, that would kind of give me an indication, like, okay, does this guy have sort of like strong hitting skills, essentially? And I've even broken it down into the dashboard based on just sort of like their hard hit mash ability, essentially, or also their plate discipline. So that's essentially how it gets broken down. And then, yeah, I really don't look at those other pieces. I sort of just look at PAWA, and then I have PAWA broken down by all the different components in that dashboard. So I'll kind of look to see like what's changing or what this particular player is good at. So that's kind of how I use it. And then I just use that in conjunction with projections. I still think that projections do a great job of incorporating other concepts that things like PAWA and ACES don't, which is, weighting past performance in a way that is most predictive. Like when we look at things like PAWA and ACES, it's kind of discrete in that it only looks at previous season. Whereas like projections look at combining, you know, like the last, whatever for that stat is, it makes the most sense, like whether it's like a lot of energy plate appearances or whatnot. So it looks across multiple seasons, adds elements of regression and aging curves. Like those are the kinds of things that PAWA and ACES just don't do. So I like to combine pretty much just PAWA with projections, and those are the main things that I'm looking at.
Have you thought about making like an overall PAWA, or it's probably not necessary the more I think about it, but like I just have Bryce Harper's page up just while you're talking, just for fun. And the dude, it gets bright green. Like if you're on Savant, it's bright red, but it's bright green. Yeah, that's what this is. So it's like, and it makes sense because it's Bryce Harper, but like his career power, it's not necessary, but those are the kind of, they'd be kind of fun to see how that would go. Definitely not necessary. Don't put that extra work on your table. It's just kind of like, as I'm looking at it going, oh, this is kind of,
I know that would be interesting, right? Or I'll have to think about that at some point.
But so when you're doing this kind of stuff and you look at the overall like leaderboard, you have the PAWA percentage, then you have PAWA. For those that don't know, like if it's a zero PAWA, roughly 50% PAWA percentage. WRC plus, an average WRC plus is 100. Is that kind of a similar correlation status you'd be looking at? What we've talked about WOBA, do you think it correlates best with WOBA, or do you think it's best with a different metric?
No, I think it, you know, I actually don't know. I don't know what it necessarily correlates the most with. I know there is a relatively strong relationship between POWA and WOBA. So if you looked at if a player has a strong WOBA in one season, they're also probably going to have a pretty strong POWA. So I think I did the testing. I'm looking at it right now. It ended up being about a 0.57 in season R squared between POWA and WOBA. So like in sort of like, yeah, I think I'm probably oversimplifying, but essentially that means like POWA kind of explains like maybe 57% of WOBA or so in that season, or is descriptive of 57% of WOBA. So like they're relatively correlated and have a decent relationship between the two.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm reading your deal now about how it's much stickier than like WOBA and X WOBA, and it's a stat that can continue on. So that's pretty awesome. Yeah. One's a lot to me. It's a lot easier to grasp than pitching the ace one to me, because it makes sense the way you broke it down between let me pull up the player page again. When you have the hard hit abilities and the plate disciplines for us that have been doing this enough, we know, like I said, the barrels and all that. So it makes sense. Like, okay, this is what we're looking for. So I don't have a million questions like I do for aces. It's just like, okay, this just totally makes sense. And it's pretty darn awesome because it just takes everything and puts it into one. And I love the part that you did. The plate discipline is very important. They're almost weighted equally in theory. Plate discipline and hard hit.
Yeah.
And it's important because strikeouts, walks, and O-swing, there's some guys that are way better in that, but maybe don't have a ton of power, but it shouldn't penalize them, right?
Exactly.
Like this is, so that's one reason I'm glad you kind of gave a similar weighting
to the whole deal. Yeah. And I think that is one of the benefits of using something like XWOBA in the past. And that's why I liked using that, because like when you go to something like just the Savant leaderboards, they're great, but you see guys like Sano, Judge, just Stanton, all of those guys, and like for great reasons, because they absolutely killed the ball, but it doesn't necessarily give you the complete picture. And that's what I was hoping to have, is like I want to see that, but I also want to combine that with other parts of the game that are important as well. And so I thought that the interesting part about the plate discipline side of things too is I was hoping things like swinging strike rate would get incorporated, or other elements of like Z swing, or just other kind of like really nitty gritty things that are probably really meaningful in small samples and things like that. But at the same time, I thought it was kind of cool that just very basic things that we've known are great all along tested as just much better than those. Like we have strikeouts and walks in here. They're pretty basic, but those are just important things.
Yeah. I guess the only one that I'd be curious to see if it affects anything weirdly, which obviously the numbers make sense because we said Soto and Trout, these guys, they're all up there. I wonder what adding like say contact percentage.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be a good one too. I want to say that I tested that one only because I figured you did
all this stuff. So like, I'm just throwing them out there as
interesting. Yeah, no, definitely.
But otherwise you hit all the nails on the head. Like for all the guests I've had on, or I've been on other shows, and people go, well, what metrics do you use when you're analyzing players? You've nailed most of them in this thing, like in one way or another. So it makes life so much easier to go to this. So my articles might be a lot shorter now, but I just go, hey, I got a POWA rating of this. So much different.
And that was the idea behind them too. I'm similar. Like you could even just call it laziness on mine, where it's like, man, I just want to know what are like the most important things that I should be looking at, and just how important are each of these things relative to each other. And like, that was kind of just the questions that I wanted to know personally. And so, I just went about just creating this so that way, you know, I'd have just kind of, even just like, and I mentioned this in the piece, but just almost like a shorthand sometimes in the heat of a draft, where it's like, I know the pool relatively well, but it's just nice to kind of see these just one extra column in your sheet or whatever, and just see like, okay, like this guy's, he's got strong skills, especially when we're talking about like late in drafts and you're just trying to get a quick, supplemental pick or something in like kind of late in draft. So I like having that in there.
It never hurts to have more information, like especially stuff, I guess, that puts all of it together for you. So that definitely doesn't hurt. Before we get into some player discussion on this, what's next? Like, what do you want to do with the POWA rankings?
I think this is just one of those things where continue to do a little bit of additional testing every year. And I think I'd like to get a little bit more statistically rigorous with it. I do worry, and I mentioned this in the limitations, that, you know, there might be a little bit more overlap than I would like in some of these things. Like, we know we've got things like fly ball, line drive, EV, and, average EV in here. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, they're weighted differently, but you know, maybe there could be some overlap. And same thing with like barrels per PA, and same thing, fly ball, line drive, EV. Like, I just worry that there might be a little bit of kind of like double counting in a way by including all of those things. So I think that's definitely one thing. And so, yeah, but I think overall, I think it's just more of like just continuing to test annually. Like, you know, you mentioned that contact percentage idea, like just continuing to look at additional metrics that we have and seeing, you know, what makes the most sense to include in here.
The other thing I meant to ask during the ACES, but it can apply to both metrics, to be honest. With the discussion of the new baseballs this year, how do you think, just for fun, like this will affect your metrics?
You know, I don't think it'll affect it a ton.
Well, you're not doing distance, so it shouldn't affect that.
Yeah, because unless there's like additional, I guess maybe the reason the distances would be shorter is because there would be a little bit less drag or something and less EVs. So maybe a little bit, but I think one thing that I've done with these is that they are a bit contextual in a sense that the percentiles are relative to other hitters in that season.
Okay.
So maybe
it'll all kind of factor out.
Right. So maybe the actual numbers, you know, like let's say Bryce Harper, maybe his average EV will go down a little bit, or maybe his max EV will go down. But if everyone else's goes down in a similar way, then he'll rank in a similar way by PAWA. So I think that's maybe one way where it gets mitigated. But I don't know, if some hitters are more impacted by the de-juice ball than others, then that could show up there. I don't think that'll happen. I think that'll be at least with something like EV. But maybe for pitcher performance, I could definitely see it happening where guys that are a little bit more homer prone could benefit. But I don't think that's going to show up a ton in ACES and PAWA.
Okay. Also, in your PAWA metric, I said like zeros are around 50%, give or take, some a little high, up to 60 or so. You got guys like Simeon, Liriano, Buxton, a bunch of guys down here. This isn't a player by player question, but these are still guys we like to draft going into the season. So where do you kind of have, I guess, your cutoff or your higher level of concern when you're looking at PAWA?
Well, I think, I haven't totally gotten to it, but I took an initial pass at a potential fade list of things that I would consider. But I think the big, this is maybe where it's a good time to talk about the limitations of PAWA. I think what PAWA is designed to do is it's designed to predict future performance as defined by WOBA. I think WOBA is a great metric. Mm-hmm. And I think if we were trying to figure out who the best baseball players are, it might be one of the best, but it's not perfect for fantasy. And so I think that's the limitation of using it just blindly for fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I think the areas where I might consider not worrying as much about PAWA, as long as it's not horrible, is when there's speed involved, because that's just not going to be captured at all within PAWA. Batting average to a certain degree won't be either. You know, to a certain degree, a little bit it is, right? Because strikeouts are incorporated here. You chasing pitches incorporated here. Your ability to hit the ball hard is incorporated here. So average is a little bit, but not fully. So I think those are the two things that I would look at first is this guy contributing speed? Is this guy contributing really plus batting average? That might not be fully captured here. And then lastly, just maybe like things, other contextual factors like ballpark, lineup position, like surrounding lineup around them, like just kind of using your Simeon example, if he's hitting at the top of a relatively good Jays lineup in, a hitter's park in Buffalo, well then like, you know, that's not all that stuff's being captured in PAWA.
True. That's a great point. So I guess use PAWA to kind of get you there and then maybe throw in the other 2 cents or whatever.
Yeah. And that's why I think projections are great too. I think projections do a good job capturing a lot of those other elements that are hard to see in things like PAWA.
And that's one reason why we use ATC a lot, because it kind of puts all the projections together. Yep. That's another reason why I really like what Derek Carty's doing with the BatX now, because he's incorporating ballparks and Savant stuff that nothing's really done before. And you can see some differences. And even his bat to BatX projections, we're like, okay, I can see where he's kind of getting that from.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm the same way. I mainly use ATC, but I don't know, and I don't think Ariel has ever talked about this. I don't know what exactly goes into that. I know it's like an amalgamation of multiple systems. And I know, I'm sure BatX and, or I don't know about BatX, but I'm sure
that I don't think BatX is yet. I think I don't think BatX is yet.
Okay. Yeah. And so I kind of like to look at the bat too, because I feel like, you know, I haven't done enough digging on all the other systems, but I feel like Derek does a good job with all those other contextual factors. Like, I think he incorporates things like defense, you know, definitely ballpark, schedule. I think he's incorporated as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great way looking at the bat or the BatX to get some context.
No, it's, yeah, he does. He looks at all that stuff. That's one reason why, like I said, like I like both their metrics or their projections. Then if you throw in Powell to go with it, that's a great way to kind of decide on some players there. So yeah. let's talk about some players.
Talk some.
And some of the fun names that are out there. Frenchie Cordero might not even play every day right now, but it's I wanted to bring it up because it's a fun name. Everyone loves him. When he hits the ball hard, he hits it a mile. Like there's a lot to love about Frenchie, except he just can't play. So it's interesting, but you know, Powell likes him. He had a 98 percentile last year, but then a 69 in 2018. He just jumps all over the board with his metrics. When you look at his player page, basically, like what stands out to you? Is it something to like, or are you just kind of like, yeah, I don't know?
I think there is something to like in a certain way in that I think he has potential for power and speed. He's going to play in Fenway. He was kind of the centerpiece of the deal that sent Benintendi to Kansas City. So you'd like to think that when he's ready, in terms of health, he'll be up and playing every day. And so I think those are all good things going in his favor. And as you said, he rated in the top 2% by Powell last year. I think the one thing you have to be careful with there a little bit, though, is that it was on 42 plate appearances. True, and I'm looking at the biggest thing that popped off to me. You know, he is definitely been really great by able to hit the ball really hard. Like you see green all over that. Mm-hmm. But the area that you see just like super green that is very shocking is his K rate. And that's because he had less than a 10% K rate last year. And you know, it still was 42 plate appearances. So, you know, that's interesting. And his chase rate went down too. So like he was actually in the top 25% by chase rate last year. So I think that's good, but I don't trust that at all. Like I think he was like a 35% K rate guy. I think projections have him around 33% strikeout rate. So there's just no way that that's going to stick. So I think he's probably closer to something like call it maybe 75th percentile, you know, not necessarily that super, super high end guy, but overall, yeah, I like Franchi. I see him going in the mid sort of like late 300s. I could definitely see myself taking there. He'll be someone I'm reading news really close on. Actually, I was earlier today. It sounds like it's kind of just a health thing with him. If he can get healthy, he should be able to see time in that outfield.
If he got regular playing time, I'd be very excited. But another thing on these player pages, which is helpful, it's like, okay, you see 98%. You're like, oh, this guy was good. Then you look at his NFBC dollars, he was minus $6. So it's like you have to like step back and go, okay, there's a little more to everything. So
And
that's why I like how you have it all covered there. So just one number, like you go to you know certain metrics where you see one number, like, okay, that's what it is. But it's like it points you to where to look, and then you see the farther research per se. You're like, okay, maybe not so much.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely included this because it's helpful, especially because like I was saying with Powell, it doesn't capture all of like the fantasy relevant factors. So I think something like those NFBC dollars are helpful. I think one thing you do have to be a tad bit careful with something like Franchi though is just such limited playing time that I think those one thing that would be cool to add here is like dollars per plate appearance or something like that.
That would be awesome.
See how like their sort of true talent was on a plate appearance basis, which again, mm-hmm. We're talking about small samples, so it might not be super reliable, but it would be at least interesting because like something like his -6, it's like, you know, he had 42 plate appearances and like other people were like more in the 200. So it's just, he's naturally going to be at a disadvantage there.
That's a great point. And it's also, that's almost what it was where it's in season. Okay. Now if I need to stream him for 2 weeks, is he more valuable than this other guy where
this other
guy's better in like a large sample, but maybe Franchi can get hot for 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's interesting as well. Kyle Seager, the ageless wonder, it feels like. He just keeps getting older, and the dude keeps hitting, and he had one of his best years last year for Seattle, and the numbers show it, but it wasn't just last year. For the most part, the power rankings have been pretty good to Kyle Seager. Is there anything that stands out to you when you look at his player page?
No, other than that, he's just super old and boring. I mean, he's 34. He's going to be 34 this year, and he doesn't – I mean, it's becoming a sexier team with Kelenic and Rodriguez on the verge of being called up. You know, they got some pitchers coming up. So it's becoming a more interesting team, but it was just, you know, a super uninteresting team for a long time. So I think that's largely what it is. I mean, you do worry a little bit about age. Is this the season where things just kind of go a little bit awry? But he's going outside pick 300. I think that's a perfectly fine pick. You're almost surely going to be earning value on that pick at that point. So I think he's not someone that you're probably excited to draft, but I think this is how you just churn value at just every single spot on your roster is by taking guys like this.
Yeah, in deeper leagues, you just got to accept that he's boring, but he's going to, at the end of the year, he's one of the guys I always talk about is just look at the back of the baseball card. there's going to be a lot of times where he just don't even, his stat line looks boring, but the overall number at the end is going to be really good. So just let that go. That's all you got to think about. It's not flashy by any means.
Yeah, exactly.
This other player now, Brandon Lau, he's a conundrum for me because each year he's gotten better and better, and the metric shows that. His draft price continues to go through the roof, and I just have a hard time drafting him because I'm just not sold on what he's doing. When I look at his player page here, should I be sold on his production based on this metric and what it's looking at, or is there any level of concern for you as well?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on Lau, or is it? I think it is Lau.
Is Lau. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, this is Lau. I'm kind of with you on him. He definitely has been improving. I think he's just one of those guys where, because at least on the hitter side, I do, especially relatively early on in the top 50 to 100. Picks or so, I do kind of like to stay, you know, pretty value based on projections, and he's just not someone that really ever pops for me in that way. I think he's going like an, you know, inside pick 70 here, and let's see where I've got him on. Let's see where ATC has him. They've got him at, you know, like the 100th overall player or so. So I think, you know, he's interesting. I mean that the strikeout rate was definitely what I would have been worried about in the past, and that's been improving. His reach rate has been improving as well. So it seems like his plate discipline side is improving. And that's a big question with him. All of the hard hitting metrics are fine. Like, we kind of know he's able to do that. It's just a matter of, can he not strike out not strike out too much where he can put a playable batting average out there. And then, yeah, I guess you always worry a little bit about just the Rays not necessarily maximizing guys' plate appearances because they don't need to. And so that can always just be a tiny ding on someone's value from having that true ceiling kind of season. Mm-hmm. And I think just combine that with the fact that the projections don't suggest particularly great value. In fact, they suggest no value really at all where he's going. Mm-hmm. Not really a guy I'm ending up with.
Yeah, that's how I've been. Like, I look at the projections. I look at, like, I don't discount what he's done. Like, he's been really good, but I can't sell myself on the increased draft price. But there's people that I respect that love him. They're going to bat for him. And it's just like, it's one of those, like, you have a list of guys, you're like, I'm not going to draft them. If they do well, I'll tip my cap. Like, I'm not going to do it. He's one of them. And I already know I'm going to have weeks this year. I'm just like, dang it. But
I know.
It's just, he's one of them, but it's tough.
Yeah.
Let's go to Brian Hayes, a youngster for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He was a touted prospect, came up like midseason last year, like 30 games or so. And so the sample size is very small. But, you know, before I even look at the power metric, people knew his StatCast numbers were just jumping off the page. So obviously that correlates over here to power and to other metrics. But his O swing's a little concerning, ground balls and pop-ups very high. When you look at this, at a small sample, if you like him, you're going to have to buy in early. He's like a 120-ish, give or take, maybe a little earlier in drafts right now. What do you look at on this player page on a small sample that says, yes, I want to take my chance, or B, I'm just going to wait and see what happens?
I think some of the questions with him coming up were, does he have the big power? I think there were questions that he wasn't really a big power guy, maybe like more of like a 15 to 20 homer kind of guy. And so I think he answered those questions last year. I think some of these things, I know there's only 95 PAs, 65 batted ball events, so not a massive sample, but I think a lot of these things looked quite good. He was in the 70th percentile by max EV, top 10% by average EV and percentage of balls hit 95 plus. So, I like Hayes. I think he's not necessarily one of those guys where I'm ending up with everywhere or loading up on, because like you said, he does require a relatively premium pick. And he's an interesting player in that he's got the prospect pedigree. We can see from here, he can hit the ball hard. He's got relatively solid plate discipline. He'll provide a little bit of speed. So I think he's got a lot working in his favor. So I like him where he's going, but just, yeah, not enough to necessarily say like I need to put on this guy on all rosters. And I think just one other thing that could hold his like fantasy value back a little bit is just it's not going to be a good lineup. So he's going to hit relatively highly there, but I just don't. It's going to be hard to have like one of those massive seasons with hitting in that lineup. So I like him though. He's I think he's fine at his ADP.
Yeah, it's very tough in Pittsburgh to be super fantasy relevant.
Yeah,
especially with all the guys they've sold off on. But he's interesting because like I had James Anderson from RotoWire on, very smart prospect guy back in November, and I was talking about a lot of these because last year a ton of prospects got called up compared to normal. So I had him on. We just kind of went through them all, and you get Brian Hayes and Alec Baum kind of compared a lot. Two third base prospects both came up, and James was in the camp of Anderson's or Hayes is better than Baum. And he went into the descriptions of it, and he thinks Hayes is like the power speed combo is really, really legit. So yeah. It's interesting to see how this goes. And in drafts, Baum's going higher than Hayes. He keeps going higher. Like he's been moving up even more. So it's a fun one to see how it plays out. And I'm on team Hayes, but it's tight. It's very, very tight.
And James is super sharp for anyone who's, I'm sure, if, you know, for all your listeners, I'm sure they're familiar with him, but he's a super sharp guy. I follow pretty much everything he puts out there. So I always feel better when his opinion kind of aligns with what I'm thinking.
Yeah. It's the listeners of the show should know James just because, like, this is your third appearance. I think James has been on 8 or 9 times. Like he has the record because it's like, there's a bunch of good prospect guys, and I've had a bunch of them on, but James is like my first contact many times.
Yeah.
Like you're my guy. Let's do this.
Yeah.
So I'm with you there. His info is very, very valuable. Yeah. Before we get to listener questions, anything else? Paua, Aces, questions for me? Anything you got?
No, right now I'm working on kind of a companion piece to what I put out from Aces. Like to look at those 200 plus, you know, those guys going after pick 200. Sort of a similar exercise, looking at who's ranking well by Paua, who's got sort of like that minimum projection that we're looking for, and then like I guess also just one of the last pieces I like to look at too is just who looks like a relative value relative to projections as well. So. That'll be coming out this week. So that's the main thing I've got going there. So I'm looking forward to like that. Those are always fun exercises. I love looking at those later targets. It was a pretty successful exercise last year too. Like I probably didn't even profit nearly enough. Like I kind of put together a deep target list last year of guys going after pick 300 that looked really good by Paua. And like, I was probably pretty underweight on a lot of them. I don't know why. And a lot of them end up having pretty good seasons.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I love the late round targets. And that's a important part of drafts. So, like, you made a metric here, or you made a little chart here. ADPs inside the top 150, below average Paua, projected ATC, or they're projected to be worse than the ADP, basically. So, guys, that are you in or out on? So, I'll let you have the floor here. What questions you got here?
Well, so what I was trying to think through, I think there's like we talked about late targets. I think that's one thing that I'm always looking at. But I think one thing that I'd like to look at a little bit more are two other things, and we'll talk about one of them here. The first one, though, that's not this, is who are kind of like, I hate to put it this way, but this is probably the quickest way to describe it. It's like, who's this here is Yelich from, you know, 2017 or whatever. Like, who's the guy who's going kind of like definitely an expensive pick? Call it top 50 to 100, but like we could be talking about in the first round next year, like Bellinger from 2 years ago and Yelich from 3 years ago, like those kinds of guys. Like those are the kinds of guys that I'd love to take a deeper pass at going to find. But I think one other area that I've gotten tripped up in the past is just sort of being a little bit too value based with my drafting and ultimately ending up with landmines. And so that's what I'm talking about here is like, who are guys that are going relatively expensive? So I define that here as top 150. You got to take this guy with the top 150 pick. They don't really have, you know, skills by Paua. And then I think one reason I brought projections into here as well is to help us sort of like figure out, is this player doing things like speed and batting average that we're not seeing in Paua, and therefore the pick makes sense. So that's why I looked at guys who are going, basically projections like them less than ADP. So I mentioned, I think I brought up 8 here. So I think maybe I'd love to ask you about any of these guys really, but you know, like Yoan Moncada, for example, I've heard pretty polarizing things on, like Scott Jensen, who I like to listen to. And I really trust his opinion. I think he's a super sharp guy. He's basically calling Moncada free money at ADP of 80. I know he's got the super strong pedigree. He's already had, you know, a year where, you know, he easily beat that ADP. So I can see it, but like, I'm looking at this here and was horrible last year by Paua. Maybe he just completely ratted off. Projections don't particularly like him. So I think this is just one of those plays where you're looking at something beyond the numbers. I don't know. Like, where are you falling on Moncada, though?
I am in the camp with Scott. I've been preaching y'all on Moncada that I'm not so much – I don't know if he's in the next Yelich, but I could see like a top 30 pick, top 2 round pick next year. The biggest thing with Yoan Moncada, and if you look at his 2019 numbers, where those were, even his 2018 numbers, the hard hit rate and everything, elite, like really top end stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of his other metrics. What happened last year was COVID. And he got COVID, and he was very vocal. One of the few guys that said every day was hard for him to get out of bed. He had no energy. Like, he played pretty much every day. He had 231 plate appearances. That's pretty much towards the top. that's why he wasn't stealing bases. Like, he wasn't doing anything. I know this metric doesn't do steals, but like his whole game was gone because he had literally no energy.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Scott says it. That's why I say it. And it's hard to know for all these guys. Not many of them talked about it, but he was very vocal, even in season, that I just kind of tossed 2020 out the window. And that's where the projections will also be in trouble, because a lot of them, especially like aerials and stuff, they use previous seasons and kind of move things together. Well, if you use 2020 of Mankata, they're all going to stink. And so I just, that's one of those where, and I use projections like you do and stuff. It's one of those where when I look at it, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take my chance here on Yoan Moncada. Because even last year, you know, you have here his ADP right now is, I think, 61.
He's creeped up.
Oh, 81. No, you have 81.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
You have 81. But, you know, last year he's probably between 50 and 60, if not higher.
Yeah.
So it's one of those. That's I think it's free money, and that you're getting probably a 3-round discount, if not more, on a potential very, very talented third baseman. So I'm with Scott on this one.
Okay, and I'm seeing it a little bit better. Like I kind of like to see it a little bit in the numbers, and I'm kind of starting to see a path of where you guys are coming from on this. Where,
well, I think your player page shows it very well.
No, it's exactly what I'm seeing. So I'm basically, but what I'm seeing here is probably three things with Moncada. One is his 2020 from a hard hitting ability looks like an outlier. It's really low. Mm-hmm. It's awful. He's been elite top 10% the previous 2 years, but then also his walk rate from 2019 looks a bit like an outlier, very low, whereas the other years he'd been sort of in the top 20-25% or so. So it's like, and then if you combine those two, where he brings back his hard hitting ability that he's had every single season and combines it with some improved walk rate from 2019, where he already ranked as a top 50 player in the NFBC 15 team ranks, then and you get him at pick 80, like you might be getting a bit of a three round spread or a 2-round spread on 2019 with potentially upside for more if he can combine that, you know, sort of improved plate discipline, the walk rate with those previous hard hitting numbers. So I'm a little bit more, maybe a little bit more sold after having this conversation than I was going into it.
Yeah, and that's why this metrics is fun. That's why I like having the conversation with you, because it's to, you know, 31% power stands out for a guy that you know is better than that.
Yeah.
So it makes you want to look at it. And then if you look at the rest of his page, like, okay, wait a minute, something was definitely off.
And I think especially the reason I want to bring him up, and I think why projections don't like him all that much, is he's getting plenty of plate appearances. It's not the playing time issue. He's projected for 626. So that's not why he's projected for lower. He's only projected for 7 stolen bases, only a .257 batting average. So it's like Powell is capturing what he would sort of drive from a fantasy level. He's not like a huge plus in stolen bases or batting average, whereas like Powell is missing something there. So that's why I thought he was a good one to raise there.
Definitely.
There were a few more, and actually maybe even kind of sticking with that same podcast I was listening to. It was Scott Jenstad, Jeff Erickson had Scott Pianowski on.
Great episode.
Yeah, it was good. And Pianowski brought up Tommy Edman, someone I really wasn't thinking about too much. And I thought he made some good points, potentially leading off. But he looks pretty awful here. And I know he brings some speed. He's at 265 projected batting average, not plus by any means, but I think that's probably a little bit above average at this point. And his PAs are potentially a little bit low at 565. Maybe that's it could be higher if he truly is leading off for most of the season. He's got multiple position eligibility, but bottom 30% by power. ADP of 128 is well below where ATC projects him, closer to the 200th best player. Where are you at on Edman?
Edman's tough, and it's kind of, I agree with what I think it was Pianowski said about Edman. The reason why he's going so high, and I have a lot of shares of Tommy Edman, and I've talked about it on other shows, the different places. It terrifies me because I see the guy that's 10 to 15 home runs, 15 to 20 steals, which is actually kind of good in the grand scheme of things. What I love about Tommy Edman is he's going to lead off. There's no doubting that, unless something really strange happens. And he's got a good offense behind him, at least for the first 4 or 5 hitters, which is promising. And what Pinau said, and it's huge, especially for like NFBC. In NFBC, second base, shortstop, third base, outfield, maybe even one everywhere. Other position. That is tremendous, especially at a second base position where he's going. He's like the 10th or 11th second baseman off the board, and things dry up unless you want to reach. I'm like, Colton Wong's there and Cesar Hernandez. Those guys are good. Don't get me wrong, but you're starting to see it. If you look at changes in ADP after like a Tommy Edman, these other guys are getting pushed up so much. And so you have to be really comfortable with jumping like two or three rounds to get a Colton Wong? Like, do you want to do that? So that's where I find myself taking Tommy Edman. That's why I have a lot of Tommy Edman. But the metrics make sense. It's not a feel good, like he's going to light the fantasy world on fire type pick.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't thinking a ton of Edman, probably because I tend to be a bit of a value based drafter, for better or for worse. And so he didn't really pop too much for me. And then when I heard P&L mention him, I'm like, I'm going to look into him a little bit more. And yeah, he sort of showed up here as, like, at least based on the criteria I was trying to build to try to find like potential guys to fade or landmines, he showed up there. So I thought that was surprising, but no, I think those are all good points. I'm not sure I'm gonna end up with a ton of him.
I don't blame you. I can definitely like see it. It doesn't feel great. It really doesn't. Like, I have like a couple more drafts. My goal is not to draft Tommy Edman in any of those drafts.
Yeah, exactly. He's not a guy you want to be totally overweight.
No.
And okay, I think I got at least one more for you. You let me know if we're almost out of time here. Okay. Yeah. Victor Robles.
Yeah,
EVR loves him.
EVR loves him.
I was you can see I'm easily swayed here. I was like, yeah, I think EVR makes a lot of sense. I think he's already shown he's has a top 100 fantasy season on his books at age 22. Mm-hmm. He was a big prospect. We've heard the stories last year that he bulked up too much. You know, it's a great narrative. Mm-hmm. Didn't really help him very much. He bulked up, but somehow his hard hitting ability was like more or less kind of along his career lines, aka not very good. You know, the plate discipline is still pretty poor. In fact, his strikeout rate, which was at least, you know, above average before, was in the bottom 25% or so last year. And his ADP has pushed up to a point where, you know, I when DVR was talking about it a lot, you know, he's talking about like around pick 150 or so. I could see that. I'm like, okay. But now he's being pushed up to like 106, 104 around pick 200 or so. And like projections have him around 160. You know, he's going to chip in. Not even chip in. He's going to be a plus base fielder. So that's what Powell is missing. But like, yeah, where are you at in Robles? Like, are you, obviously you'd rather have him at 150, but are you in at around pick 100 if that's where it takes to get him?
Yeah. I took him at like 113 in a slow draft today. So it's one of those where DVR and myself, it feels like every offseason I start listening to DVR again. And I'm like, we're on the same page again. Cause I've been team Victor since he got called up.
Yeah.
And I've told people as, I love Juan Soto, and it's impossible not to love Juan Soto. But when Juan Soto got called up, he only got called up because Victor Robles was injured in the minors.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Victor Robles was the next guy. The thing with Victor Robles, and we saw it in 2019, like you mentioned, he had very productive power and speed, which you'd expect from him. He's not going to hit 30 home runs. Like, just not – if he hits 20, you're over the moon.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just look 15 to 18, but he's going to still get 25 to 30 bags. That's what you want. He's just never going to be that hard hit guy. But he's learned to play with it. He pulls the ball. The reason why he's going up so much in drafts and the reason why he's so much more attractive is the Nats have come out and said, we want Victor Robles to be our leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
Now, if you put that man, even if he's not in for power, at the top of that order with Turner and Soto and Bell and Schwarber and all these guys behind him, and he can go steal bags, he can score 100 runs and he can steal 35 bases.
Yeah.
Like, this, it's tremendous value. That's why when that announcement got made, he went from like 150 to 105. Yeah. That's the difference. Yeah. That's why I'm in. He's definitely one of the guys that you just got to have a blind spot to the hard hit, all that information.
Yeah.
Because it never looks good at all.
Yeah. And that's where I was saying Powell definitely misses on guys like this, where, you know, it's going to look bad. For a lot of the speed guys, it does. And that's because they bring the speed to the table from a fantasy perspective. That's not going to be captured all in power. Robles doesn't really, he actually probably brings a little bit like a minus batting average, perhaps, at least based on projections. So I don't think he's getting dinged too hard there, but I guess, yeah, if he truly can take that leadoff spot, hold it and improve his K rate, kind of like he did before, sort of like back along career lines, then yeah, I think that could be a guy. I like, to a certain degree, I kind of do like betting on pedigree, even when you don't see it. You don't see it yet, but you know, some like that. That's how you kind of get.
He's like 23 years old.
Yeah,
like exactly. People are giving up on the kid. He's 23 years old.
Yeah,
like I've accepted he's not going to be a power hitter. That's fine. But if you tell me this guy can hit leadoff, and we see what he did, the pedigree you mentioned in the minors, sign me up for that.
Like, he's got one full season on his books, and he was a top 100 player there.
Yeah, when he did that going into 2020, his draft price was like 55 or 60.
Yeah.
So people are like discounting him so much because he had a rough season where he's admitted he came in big and all the stuff. And like, I'm sorry. And he's already this spring, I guess, three or four homers. He's stolen four or five bags. Like, he looks like he's hitting like 260. That's what Victor Robles does.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, hey, you're convincing me on a lot of these. I think maybe the Edmund one I'm not totally sold on yet, but yeah, I feel like
don't blame you there. But Robles and Moncada, big fans of those.
Yeah, two. I've come closer on Moncada and Robles, and weirdly enough, Edmund and Robles are perhaps like kind of similar in the case you're trying to make for them, and like leadoff guys, if they have a good lineup, going to steal a little bit of bases. But I think Robles just had, and Edmund's a little bit more on the position eligibility side, whereas Robles is a little bit more on you know, just more speed upside, more pedigree lineup
with him for sure.
Arguably better lineup. So yeah. I can see
and better line. Ballpark.
Yeah. There you go. Better ballpark too. Yeah. I think that also shows I probably just don't value position eligibility perhaps enough. So I think that's maybe one thing in my game where I definitely have found that having a hard time filling lineups sometimes, especially in those 50 round drafting holes, I might need to buy that a little more.
Yeah, 15 team leagues, especially after last year, and we've already seen the injury bug come out now. I see it happening, like Eno's talked about it and other guys, with the different schedules and how they're doing the restrictions and stuff. There's going to be a lot of freaky injuries. We saw last year that flexibility was huge.
Yeah. So I think that's something I need to improve on. Well, man, let me know if there's anyone else on this list. I'll read it out for everyone just to kind of go through again, like my rubric to try to find these potential fades that I just don't want to leave the draft table with, you know, a relatively premium pick and I'm getting very little to show for it. And so again, I went through and looked at top 150 picks, guys that ranked below average in power, and then guys that projected to be worse or just, you know, yeah, worse by projections than by ADP. And so that list was Carlos Correa, Jose Altuve, Tommy Edman, Yoan Moncada, Keston Hira, Adalberto Mondesi, Andrés Giménez, and Victor Robles. So those eight guys. Anyone else that we didn't talk about there that you think you feel particularly strongly about there, whether it's total fade or you're buying?
It's a very good list because it's a very polarizing list depending on where who you talk to. Correa, I'm out on. He's never been healthy for me, so I'm just gonna notch that up to I can't do it because the hard hit metrics are great, but he's just never healthy. Altuve, I'm buying back in on. If you throw his postseason numbers, which is more at bats, I think, in the postseason than the regular season, they were very good, and he faced better pitching.
Yeah.
So look at that metric. And you can say the same for Correa, but his health thing just scares me too much.
Yeah.
So Altuve, you're getting like in the ninth round. I'll take that chance. Even if you return a sixth round value, that's a win. So yeah. I'll take my chance with Altuve in that one. Keston Hira, I just can't. Like, the talent's there, I get it, but he can't hit a fastball. Like he's already striking out like 50-60% in spring training right now. It's bad. So that's one of those, like, kind of like the Brandon Lau. If he does well, I'm just gonna tip my cap. Like, I could see it happening, but I'm not there. Mondesi, I like, but the price is too high for me. And Giménez, his price has climbed so much, it's terrifying.
Yeah,
like, it's terrifying.
Yep. Okay.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
But I see the appeal, especially. The Giménez one is interesting, and Mondesi, I guess, because you're drafting them for steals. And if you're in an overall competition, they can be game changers. So I see the appeal there. I can't do it.
Yeah. So I mentioned to you, like, this list was a bit tough for me because a couple of these guys I've already rostered. So, like, mm-hmm. I think I've got both Altuve and Mondesi actually in TGFBI, mainly, again, like you said, that overall component. I was kind of
makes
shooting
sense
a little high there. I don't know if I regret that or not, but was kind of feeling that. And I like your points on Altuve for sure about the playoffs.
If you look at projections like you do, Mondesi, if he hits his projections, he's one of the best fantasy players in baseball.
Yeah.
So, like, it's one of those deals. I won't ever argue someone taking him. I have him in some keeper leagues, but where he's getting drafted right now, I just, like, I'm taking an SP1 or something, but I get it. I totally get it in an overall competition. No arguments at all.
Yep.
You have one to two must-have players, hitter, pitcher, that you're grabbing in every draft.
Yeah.
For me, pitcher-wise, I am running to draft Lucas Giolito wherever I can. I think he has potential to be in the DeGrom-Cole conversation next year. If you want to go farther down the board, I'm going to pull up this Aces page first before I get really scared on the next guy I'm going to mention. But let's see how he shows up here. Okay, he's not bad. Marcus Stroman. I am all in on Marcus Stroman this year. He didn't play last year, so he's getting dropped down, I think, in drafts. He's developed a split change that looks filthy this spring. And his strikeout rate increased once he got traded to the Mets last year, or 2 years ago, I guess that would be. So I'm buying in on a guy that you're getting close to pick 200, where he should be closer to like 125 or 130. Yeah.
So. Really nice floor too. I feel like I was going to say typically, I guess that year off, we have no idea, but I would feel
more like often than not. Yeah.
Yeah.
So nice. That'd be the pitching and hitting. I've drafted so many leagues, but like, I like Mankata a lot. I have a lot of Gleyber Torres. It feels like, cause I'm buying back. He's like an eighth round guy right now that does not deserve to be eighth round guy. And then I know there's a bunch of outfield. Like Mark Canha is a guy in the outfield I've been drafting a ton, hitting towards the top of the Oakland lineup, like if it's super late in drafts. But hitters, there's a lot of different hitters I like. It just depends on how the draft flows. Pitching, I'm a lot more focused on my pitching, like Stroman, Lindblom, I have a lot of. But hitters, I can be pretty flexible with.
Yeah. I, as part of that Aces late targets piece, Lindblom surprised me a little bit. I ended up liking him a decent amount.
You like three plus pitches. Lindblom's your guy.
Yeah, he definitely is.
He's got like five pitches. Yeah. I guess six pitches that have over 10% swinging strike rate. Like if you believe in CSW, he had like four or five that are over like 30%. Like dude's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think projections like him too. I mean, projections for pitchers, especially coming after 2020, are going to be tough to trust, but there's a bit of a spread between where like ATC has him and where he's going by ADP.
Yeah, no, he's one of those guys I'm willing to, because he's post 300 in drafts. It's just, I'll take my chance. If for some reason I'm just wrong on him, that's an easy drop. Yeah. It's not going to kill you. So I think the sky is pretty high on him. All right, a couple listener questions here, and then we will wrap this up. I'm loving the show, though. Loving it. Always enjoy chatting with you. We got a couple listener questions here. Yancey Eaton, very friend of the fantasy world. And a friend of mine, he would love to hear what Pope, he calls you Pope, is doing with Tyler Glass now. Is a third pitch is real and sticks throughout the year? How does that affect his outlook? Is it enough? So we kind of talked how pitch mix can change things, but with Glass now, he's working on, I believe, as a slider, and it's looked good, but still controls iffy. Like even Nick Pollock and those guys are like, it's nice, but it's out of the zone a lot. Yeah. So, which is similar to his curveball. What's your thoughts on Glass now?
Yeah, I'm just not like it's better to have it, but I don't think skills were much the question. I think all of the question to Glass now comes down to, can he stay healthy? Yep. And does adding a slider help him do that? I mean, if it decreases his reliance on the fastball, maybe. I don't know, maybe not. So I don't think the splitter is going to be the end all be all for his value. I think really it's going to come down to health. If he can stay healthy, I think he already has the stuff. He already has the skills. He already has the sort of track record that he's shown that he can deliver on that. It just really comes down to the health. So I don't think, you know, I'll take him pitching another, you know, coming out of not being a two pitch guy and another pitch to throw into there. Maybe that could vault him up to another level. But I think it's, if I had to choose one thing, I think it'd be health over a third pitch.
Yeah. And I'm with you there. Health is always an issue. And he just needs to be able to control his pitches better, because his pitch count gets so high, he doesn't go deep into games. And it's just like he's killing you for where you're taking him in drafts. You need him to get you wins and stuff. Like, you can't just rely on strikeouts. So that's where I struggle with Glass now. Andrew Armour asks, how do you rank Woodruff, Maeda, and Lynn in a points league? You don't have to worry about points if you don't want, but you can.
I was going to say, full disclosure, I don't really play points league, so I don't know in that format. But I think at least my initial thought on that, if you play points, is that volume probably matters a little bit more, I would think. So even if it didn't, I'd probably still keep it exactly that order that he had. But I think I would just stick with that order.
Yeah, I'd have Woodruff up top. The Lynn Maeda discussion gets more interesting. I'll go that route, because Lynn is an innings eating machine. But when Maeda's on and he's pitching his innings, he's better than Lynn. So it just kind of depends on where you go there. I could see arguments either way for Lynn and Maeda. Woodruff's definitely the number one in that group for me. The next listener question we have from Vamos Roja. Have you seen much from Giolito and his new curveball in spring training? Can he take the next step? I haven't seen a ton, like watched it live, but I know he's done very, very good. And obviously I think he can take the next step, but you don't have to placate me. Do you think Giolito can take the next step?
I mean, he's pretty damn high already, right?
Yeah, like that's what I love. He's like, he's already like the fourth or fifth pitcher off the board. So the next step's really going
to
be tricky.
Yeah. And maybe that's what people are betting on, is that can he go from being kind of like a top 10 to 15 starting pitcher or two in that like top five discussion. I guess so. I think he can be in that range, but a couple of pauses that I have maybe a little bit, if I'm just trying to think about it another way, is the Park playing in the AL, but I guess the division's not great and he'll have more win potential. So I think if maybe you want to kind of hang your hat on the win potential, I think the skills are already there. So maybe that curveball helps him go to another level. Just add one more look for guys and kind of raise that sort of K minus walk rate. He can get up there a little bit higher. And then you add just maybe a slight uptick in skills with better win potential. From a fantasy perspective, yeah, maybe he can jump into that top five to five at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's one of my kind of, I don't know if it's bold because he's already very good, but I think by this time next year where he is in that top five, I have him as my number four right now, but I know not everybody does. And I get it. If you want Darvish or you want Bauer, I'm not going to argue you. They're all very, very good, but
yeah.
I think Giolito is that good, and that team he's on now is very good. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of that. Last listener question we have here, he's actually in the chat. Simon asked, thoughts on Trevor Williams and NL only now that it seems he will make the rotation. Well, NL only volume is key. So if he's in the rotation, that's huge. But I just pulled up his aces page. It's not the greatest of pages. Just going to throw it out there. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's not. If it's you're super deep, I'd say go for it. But do you have any thoughts on Trevor Williams? He wouldn't be a go-to guy for me. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on how late he's going to have. I haven't done any 50 round draft and holds, but he'd probably be someone that I'd at least take a look at there. I don't know where he's going. Actually, I'm trying to look at online and he's not on here. So I'm going to see if I can pull him on draft. See where he's going in draft champions in the last weekend or so, but he's got really plus command. And I think that's potentially part of what's driving his aces ability. And I assume we're talking about Trevor Williams in Pittsburgh.
He was in Pittsburgh. He's in Chicago. He's a free agent. He's in Chicago. The Cubs.
Okay.
So, yeah, 2020 was Pittsburgh, correct.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's still a pretty good situation, good park in the NL. Do we have any news that he's going to be the fifth guy? Because I know Auzelay was in play for that as well, who I like.
I think it's still up in the air. I haven't seen anything, but his question says it looks like he's going to be in there. So maybe something came out that I missed. I have no idea.
Okay, got it.
I know he was close, so wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I think he's fine. I mean, he's going near like pick 600. I don't know if that's going to spike now, but I think that's fine. I think if it was sort of 50-50, I'd rather take a bet on Auzelay. Granted, he's gone a little bit earlier, but I think Williams can be fine in what's a pitcher's park, good command. Mm-hmm. Can be kind of an innings eater and someone you can throw in there, whenever you need to bring a guy out. Like I know for draft and holds, like I've had a hard time filling out a rotation sometimes. So
yep.
These kinds of guys that can just give you relatively okay innings in a good context, like I'd be in on that. And something like NL only, that's got to be pretty deep as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. You nailed it there. If you're taking them late in a draft and hold, you're definitely taking them late in an NL only because innings are key. And one thing with Trevor Williams is out there because of his command, like you mentioned, he's throwing 5-6 innings more often than not. So in an NL only, that's very, very good. And the ballpark, Wrigley's only dangerous when the wind's blowing out. The rest of the time, it's very pitcher friendly.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't factor that in too much. So I like that call quite a bit. Yeah. So Simon, yes, go for it. Late in draft, don't be aggressive.
And if you do decide to start him, just take a look at the weather that day to make sure the wind isn't blowing out that day. Exactly. I think you're good.
Exactly. I think it works. And the division's not a bad one to pitch in either. So. Yeah. All right, Aaron, we will wrap it up with that. Always a pleasure. Before we sign off, plug all your stuff again. Let them know where they can find you.
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at RotoPope. I'm not quite as active as I should be, but you can find me there. And then on The Athletic, contributing to them this season, we've already got aces and power, all the stuff that we've been referencing throughout the dashboard, the leaderboards, et cetera. It's all on The Athletic. Just came out with a piece early this week on the late targets by aces. So that's already up and live. And then now working on the same thing, but on the power side of things. So should be out later this week.
Well, awesome, man. I appreciate it. Everybody should go check him out. Go if you're not a member of The Athletic yet, do it. They have like dollar deals. They have all kinds of stuff out there. There's no reason not to because you got Aaron stuff. You got Eno stuff, DVR stuff, Greg Jewett's on, like all these guys. You get all their great stuff. So go check it out. Plus the non-fantasy stuff. It's very viable. So The Athletic's one of those is definitely worth paying for. So go check that out. And Aaron, thanks for joining me, man. I look forward to this every year. And like I always say, we need to do it more often. We just got to find a way to squeeze it in. It's just once the season goes, it's just busy.
Yeah, man. So. Yeah, you're turning these out. I have a lot of respect for that. I've produced my own podcast before, did like 15 episodes. It's a lot of work. So I think you do a good job with it.
I appreciate it, man. But everybody, again, check me out on Twitter, at RotoPope. Awesome stuff with Aaron. And this was Bench with Bubba, episode 356, with Aaron Saceta talking Aces and Power. We'll catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.